Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pirate Radio, South Asian show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hi, everyone.
And, well, that was a bit of a...
What happened there?
Hi, everyone.
My voice?
Yeah, what happened there?
I don't know. Hi, everyone.
You know what?
Was that better?
It's a 7 on the energy scale, so I'll take it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Considering, like, by the way, guys, I do need to say, like... This is my morning. Like, when we do our shows at 2 p.m., like, it's my morning. Like, my Saturday schedule is, like, I wake up, I get ready, and then I come straight to the show. Mm. Like, I don't even eat. Do you know what I mean? Like, I literally wake up and come straight to the show. So, this is... I'm still morning Halima.
Not that you'd be able to tell.
What do you mean?
Like, I was complimenting you.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks, Carlos.
Yeah. Maybe from your, like, tone of voice sometimes, but not today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, how have you been? How was last week? Because you were at a wedding. Or wedding function.
I was at a wedding. So, guys, I do have some news. And for all the aunties and uncles, it's not the news that you all want to hear.
Yeah,
it's not,
I think I was going
I'm not getting. I'm like... not getting married, but... touch wood, inshallah, my sister is. Now, she's my...
Congratulations.
But she's my younger sister. Right? She's my younger sister. Now, in Bangladeshi culture, it's like... It's kind of like a big deal for the younger sister to get married before the old one because there's like a stigma attached to it. And it's like people are afraid that when it comes for the older sister's time to get married, that other people are going to be like, oh, she's not married. The younger one is that's because there's something wrong with her, blah, 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 blah. So obviously I've spoken on the show before about how desperate my family are and like to the point where they're like having a go at me. Like, you, it's because you don't want to get married. You're not taking it seriously, blah, 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 blah. I've had that for the past 5 years, right? I've been grilled. Now, all of a sudden, so my sister's getting married. She's younger than me. We've had the first, like, pre-wedding event. It's called, like, the Dekhadeki. It's, like, when the two families kind of meet each other, the extended families meet each other for the first time. And obviously, it was in my house. And, like, I'm hosting. It's my sister's in-laws. They're here for the first time. So I'm, like, running around, looking after everyone, just being a host, right? And then I'm not hungry. I don't want to eat. And, like, I'm noticing a lot of the elders of my family keep saying to me, like, eat, why don't you eat? Come on, just eat, just eat. Bearing in mind, like, my family be fat shaming me to heck. Like, they are, oh, my uncle will see me eat fruit and be like, put that down. You know, like, that's the kind of family I come from. So in my head, I'm thinking, like, why is everyone concerned about the fact that I'm not eating? But I'm like, whatever, it's not a big deal. And then, like, last week I went to this wedding and my cousin was there and she wasn't at the function, but she was like, oh, you know, everyone, all the elders are concerned about you. They think that you're not eating because you're not married. Like, they're all concerned because they think that I'm sad that my older sister is getting married. My younger sister is getting married before me. And they think that I'm sad and that's why I'm not eating. Apparently, they were all talking amongst themselves. Like, oh, my God, she looks so sad.
Because, of course, that is going to be at the forefront
of my mind when I'm, you know, like, and they're like, oh, she looks so sad. Like, we feel so sorry for her. It's just so sad. Like, that's why she's not eating. You can tell, like, she's wasting away. Because she's, so, like, for 5 years, I've had it where I've had absolute hell because I'm not married. Now, all of a sudden, I'm because they've been blaming me for the past 5 years. They're like, you're not taking it seriously. And now all of a sudden, I'm so sad that I can't eat. How ridiculous.
Which do you prefer? Do you prefer, like, the grilling you
the to grilling,
get?
Yeah, because the grilling! Because what kind
or the,
of ridiculous...
like, sympathy?
What kind of ridiculous... But it's like, what kind of ridiculous narrative? Like I'm not eating because I'm not married. Like, you lot, they're Bengalis are just...
Start attributing all of your, like, factors to it. Oh, you know,
it's because I'm not married. Everything is either when I don't want to get married, it's a problem. Now they're perceiving the fact that I do want to get married and I'm sad that I'm not, it's a problem. Like, but I just found it hilarious. Like, they were apparently just talking amongst themselves and they were like really genuinely feeling sorry for me.
I do wonder.
How did they get it into their heads? Like, I'm happy. Like, that was a happy day for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, my sister's getting married. I'm happy. Like, I'm looking after all the guests and everything. Like, I'm entertaining. How have they now translated the fact that I don't have time to eat or I'm not hungry because I'm running around to the fact that it's because she's not married and she's really sad?
It is sad that that is the thing that comes to their mind rather than focusing on, oh, this is a happy day. Like, let's focus on the fact.
Yeah.
That,
That's, oh my God.
Yeah.
Even my mom, like the day before the thing came and she like nearly started crying. She's like, I just feel so bad that it's not you. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Have you ever given any inkling that you care whatsoever?
Never. I told you, it's been the opposite. For the past 5 years, I've been getting slaps on the wrists. Like, you need to take it seriously. You need to take it seriously. And now all of a sudden, oh, we just feel so sorry for you. It's so hard for you. And I'm like, I don't give a rat's beep. But yeah, Bengalis are funny, man.
I wonder whether there's ever a desi wedding that goes without some kind of, whether it's possible for a day to go by without any kind of U-turn. You know what I mean? Like divert. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's purely been created. There wasn't a problem.
And yet, you know what's funny?
Are creating themselves.
Yeah, that's it. But you know what's funny as well is that my dad is like really adamant. He's like, it's to the point where I'm just going to spill some family tea right now. But it is to the point where it's like causing some problems, because it's like my dad doesn't want to proceed with my sister's thing until I'm married, like to the point where he's actually like kind of putting his foot down and being like, well, I don't want to move forward with this. Like, it's ready, they're there, the both sides are ready. Do you know what I mean? But my dad and my uncles are like, nah, it's not right. Do you know what they've done now? This is hilarious, guys. You know what they've done? They've given me 6 months. You know what's so funny? After the event, my uncle and like the elders were talking amongst themselves, and I was like I was there in the room so I could hear what they were saying. And my uncle was trying to be discreet about it, and he was like, yes, like talking about my sister's wedding stuff. So they were like, yeah, so then we'll do the engagement, we'll do the nikah, blah blah blah, and then we won't send her off to the in-laws, we'll wait 6 months for like talking about me, like I'm in the room, and he's like, yeah, we'll just wait, we'll give 6 months, and then if it doesn't happen in 6 months, then, you know, like really morose, like, and then if it doesn't happen, and I'm like, you lot. But it's hilarious, guys, it's hilarious. So like, obviously I've been on this massive time crunch, like my family have perceived, I've been like, it's been a ticking time bomb, I am slowly expiring. Now, I have never heard them say 6 months, in the next 6 months. In their head, I'm getting married next summer. So, Carlos, keep your diary free. Keep your diary open. According to my family, I don't even have a groom. I don't have a groom, but I'm getting married next summer.
Well, maybe that's where Mango Masala should go in 2025.
What?
Matchmaking, Aaliyah.
Matchmaking, yeah. I mean, yeah. My parents would love that. But it's just so funny. It's just so funny.
When you said that
funny.
You had a marriage story, I thought it was going to be about like someone else, not like yourself.
Of course,
like,
it's me. It's always me. This is the story of my life. All I ever hear is marriage this, marriage that. And now that it's like my sister's, you know, getting married, inshallah, like it's just, it's like tenfold more. But now it's funny because now people are saying it with like an air of sympathy. You know, before it was like slap on the wrist, you need to take it seriously. And now it's like, don't worry, it will happen for you, don't worry. It was so funny.
It's kind of sad though as well, because I feel like someone who maybe wasn't as strong-minded as you are, they probably would like psychologically
feel that way.
Like, because if you start people drilling into you, oh, you must be feeling this way, you actually kind of start feeling
yeah,
that way.
It's true, it's
when
true.
Obviously there's no reason to feel that way, really, like.
Yeah, of course not, but but yeah, no.
Dearie me.
And like the whole day as well, like, because obviously my mum went like all out for this event, and like the women were like helping out and stuff like that. And like at one point, like one of my sister-in-law was like cutting vegetables, and I was like, oh, like Babi, your cutting is so nice. And she goes, don't worry, for your wedding, I'll do it nicer. I'll do it nicer for your wedding. And I'm like, can I not just appreciate the cutting for my sister's wedding? Like, they're just
how can you cut the vegetables nicer?
Like, we have a thing like it's called like a
stencil.
Have you ever seen like tiles when you give tiles and stuff? Like for weddings, you know, when you give like fruit baskets or vegetables.
Well, like pre-done ones or like what, homemade ones?
No, we make them. Okay. Yeah. So we like cut our vegetables or fine. You know, like, have you seen vegetable carving?
Fruit
carving. Yeah. So stuff like that. Yeah. So she was doing that. And I was like, oh, Bobby, looks really good. She goes, don't worry for your wedding. I'm going to do it. And it's going to be really, really nice.
Like
I'm like, will you relax?
Sculpture on I'm your like, face.
But it's like she's assuming that I'm feeling bad. So she's trying to reassure me. Like, don't worry, we'll do it for your wedding too. And I'm like, will you relax? Like, I bet you will do it for my wedding. I'm not worried about it.
Well, on this topic of weddings and pressure to get married, I think this leads quite nicely into Netflix's latest show that I think everyone's been watching at the moment. I personally watched it last night after being told to by Halima. And, yeah, let's discuss Sweet Bobby. So
it's mental. It's, by the way, yeah. I'm a massive fan of Catfish, you know, the show.
Like, yeah, because it of is stuff. Like, but it's right. So let's give context as well. So this Sweet Bobby, it's basically a 1 hour 20 type film documentary thing about how it's a real life story of this woman who was catfished for a number of years.
A decade.
Yeah.
It was decade. 10 years. Like,
And I think, let's just spoiler alert, just so we can talk about it freely. Spoiler, if you haven't watched it yet, like,
put the volume down.
Yeah. Don't go away, just put the volume down. But yeah, like you're saying, Catfish the show, I'm not a regular watcher, but I've seen episodes of it.
And oh, I love Catfish.
It's weird though, because it's always kind of framed as like being like quite a comedic thing, because it is.
It comes off quite comedic.
Yeah, because it's always kind of, it is kind of like you know what's going to happen kind of thing. Yeah. It's because it's absurd.
That's what it is. It's because it's so absurd that it borders on like comedy. The absurdity of it all, but it is. This was like, God, I didn't find anything funny about this.
Yeah, no, it's not funny because I think the core. Let's talk about, because at the core of it, the fact is, like you say, it's a whole year, right? And the story basically goes that the story starts when this woman Kira is 32, right? And 10 years later, she's obviously in her early 40s, and. Again, spoiler alert, the catfish at the end of the day is her cousin, Simran.
Yeah, so, when I was watching it, I was like, what an awful namesake.
Yeah, if there is one lesson to be learned from all of this, it is never trust
Never
Simran.
Trust a Simran.
Nope.
No, but never. That, it was mental. Like, it's actually crazy. So basically, she's in this, like, 10-year relationship with this guy called Bobby, and they're...
Surely online over, like, Facebook,
Yeah,
Skype,
they've never... Something. Well, she saw him once at the beginning of the relationship, but in a club, and like he didn't really recognize her. She thought it's because he's drunk, but then they embark on this like long 10-year relationship to the point where they get engaged online, like they get married, and the whole time they're not meeting because he's really funny. Like, he's in witness protection, he's been shot 6 times, come like 50 cent, like, see? The guy's now from when someone is saying I'm in witness protection
over Facebook,
oh, but I'm allowed to talk to you on Facebook with my real name on my real profile,
just like, no, the funny is this Bobby J. Like, or Bijandu, like
the alarm bells, I feel like, should start ringing. But it's a really interesting conversation, because it's, so basically it's the Netflix show, and then I know a lot of people who have watched the Netflix show have been like, kind of maybe like had capped sympathy for Kira, because they're like, you know, she ignored a lot of red flags, and like she must have been really stupid to just believe, because some of the lies were really truly outlandish, like witness protection, come on. But then there was a podcast, and I think that preceded the documentary. And a lot of people said when they watched and listened to the podcast, they were a lot more sympathetic, because it goes more into detail about the kind of web of deception from Simran the catfish. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like it's a really interesting comment, firstly, about like someone's state of mind when they're kind of, because it's really easy from the outside in to be like, oh my God, like she's an idiot, like she's so stupid, like she's so blind. How could you not see it? But I don't know. I think that more people would be susceptible to that than they'd like to believe. And I think it's the kind of human desire for love that lets you kind of like overlook what are very obvious red flags, because we all do it, and not necessarily, maybe not necessarily to that extent, but we do all do it. Like when we're in relationships and like someone might not be good for us, everyone else can see it, but we're there and we just keep justifying all the red flags because we're so desperate for like human love and human companionship that, you know, that's just what we'll do for it. And I think Kira's story is like a really, really big kind of like example of that.
I think also there's like kind of a contextual layer to it where it's, do you think that this would have happened to a white person, say?
That's exactly what I was going to say, because also it's like her innate, because she speaks a lot about like how she wants to be a mum and she wants to have a family and all of these things. And obviously the catfish was exploiting that like human desire for that, because, you know, they'd be like, yeah, we're going to have a family, blah, 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 blah. But also like, it is that pressure because she's a Punjabi Sikh woman. So obviously she comes from like, you know, a kind of culture where arranged marriages do happen. And like, you know, the pressure for marriage is there. And this was like a decade and a half ago. So back then it was probably more than
That's
it is
mad.
Now.
2011 was a decade and a half ago. I don't want to
Yeah, that is crazy, you know. But the point is like that. that pressure was, you know, like, it's only in the last decade, I think, that we're starting to kind of break some of those, you know, cultural norms. But back then, I can imagine it was more pronounced, that pressure for marriage.
I think also, like, the timing of it also says a lot. Like, maybe not towards, because it was weird, because I was kind of looking at it from the perspective of, okay, where was I in 2011?
And I think, where was we? Yeah, we was year 10. Yeah.
So, like, I was thinking about that and I was like, you know what? I can kind of understand how that started in 2011. Like, the whole, like...
Well, there wasn't much education as well on, like you know, internet literacy or whatever. Like, it was... Social media was still kind of, like, in its boom phase at that point.
To be honest, for me, it was kind of like, as the years progressed, I was like, at this point, I don't know, but I was just thinking about it from my perspective as to what my understanding was of, like, the internet and whatever. Mm. And I was kind of like, by the time it got to, like, the late tens, I was a bit like, how is she not kind of caught onto this? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, until we've listened to the podcast, we can't really comment, because, like you said, a lot of people have said that the podcast makes you actually understand a lot more how she was deceived. And I think it's actually only at the end of the Netflix documentary when it says that she managed to find 60 profiles that her cousin Simran had, like, made. Like,
it's insane, from her side. But because also there's no explanation. She never says why she did it. Like, she never says, like, it was for revenge, or, like, she doesn't say
Simran,
any of that.
How much time do you have on your hands? Do you want a job? Like, come and work for us.
Because,
please.
By the way, like, it wasn't it wasn't just like the texting. Like, they were sleeping on the phone, like, every day for, like years.
And the fact that he/she was then getting annoyed when she'd go to the loo and not tell him, like, how are you monitoring that? Like, what has Simran been doing all this time?
But also, like, can we also acknowledge, like, there's, like, a really twisted, like, incestuous angle to it, which is that it's
like, allegedly as well, because they don't actually say it, but it's kind of like it's implied
that there's a sexual relationship. Because the producer just asks, and Kira kind of, like, just really brushes it off. She's like, I don't think that's inappropriate.
And then when she's speaking about the police, she's like, what if I haven't given consent to
exactly,
do that?
To Simran, like, exactly. So, and like, if you're in that kind of relationship, of course, inevitably,
it would, like, that would,
you're
going to
have some have a sexual, and, like, that's, and then like, that's your, that is weird. That is, it's like, it's incest, isn't it? Like, it's some form of incest, like, like, emotional incest, like, sexual incest. It's just, oh my God, I don't know how she's all right.
Well, you know what it is as well, is that Simran, when she's, like, talking about, it shows a bit of text at the end of the documentary, and it says, we approached Simran for comment and she declined to come forward. And then it says she sees this as
schoolgirl.
It was like, it's over 10 years. Like, I'm sorry, even if it started when you were, say, 11, it finished when you were, like, 21. So, like, there's no excuse.
And even, like, at that age, like, you know what you're doing. Like, you're smart enough to to create this entire universe of, like, deception. Like, she's smart enough to know right from wrong. Do you know what I mean? I don't know, like, what must compel a person to do that. Like, and for me, that the really shocking thing about it is that it's your family. How can you, like, as a cat, like, okay, cool, you can maybe say, like, there's, you know, a desire for, like, control or power, some kind of sadistic kind of impulse to want to have control over, you know, a certain number of people's lives. But, like, it's your cousin. You could catfish anyone else in the world. Not saying that you should, but, like, you could.
But I think that's
your cousin.
That's why, though, isn't it? It's because, you know, it's not even just like, oh, you understand the culture. It's like, you understand all these people in the community. She literally dated Bobby's brother.
Right. So, and, like, I guess maybe she could see it play out as well, like, really up close. And that probably gave her some kind of sick
how could you be bothered to go with that for 9 years? Like,
well, that obviously was, like, she kind of, in her statement, she kind of, like, really trivialized that one's, like, it was like a little schoolgirl era, but that obviously characterized an entire decade of her life. Like, that, she obviously must have also felt some kind of attachment or something to that situation, because she was genuinely had, like, this anxious attachment at points with Kira, you know, playing as Bobby. But yeah, I don't know. I think I see both sides of it from Kira's perspective, where it's like, I see kind of like the grooming and the manipulation. Like, you know, I don't moralize the her being a victim of, like, manipulation and grooming. Like, I don't look at that and be like, oh my God, I would never find myself. Like, it's all, you always say it can't be me until it's you. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I don't have any false pretentiousness about that, and I don't pretend that it could never be me. It probably could. Do you know, it could be any of us. And that's what I really believe, because I think that the human kind of desire for love and companionship is really, really strong, and someone manipulated that. But I also do think there's a part of it where she also does need to be accountable for her part in her own suffering, because I think that, especially as women, like, your gut feeling is really strong, and the amount of red flags, like, to some degree there must have been some level of, like, willful ignorance. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the fact I just was watching it, and I just, like, look, I get, obviously, when it comes to, like, arranged marriages, like, you might not actually have met the person or spoken to them properly before, but this is a situation where you do actually have the opportunity to speak to someone or FaceTime them or something. Yeah. And the fact that that has never happened yet, you're going to get engaged to them.
Yeah.
I was a bit like...
And it was so many red flags. Like, she was in group chats with the guy's doctor, with his,
oh,
like,
that was another really that, bad, like, thing. When the younger cousin, I think it was Roshni, said how she had shared medical information with who she thought was Bobby.
Right, yeah.
As an underage person, but it was actually, obviously, ended up being her cousin. And it's just
it's such a violation on so many different fronts. It's insane.
We haven't mentioned as well, obviously, from Bobby and Sanja's perspective as well, for that to...
Because they're real life people. Yeah. So the way Simran played it off was like, Bobby was married to a woman named Sanj, but then they got divorced and then he got with Kira. Whereas in real life, Bobby and Sanj are actually together in a relationship. Yeah. They have a child, all of these things. And the child was also written into Kira's catfishing,
like,
narrative.
She would literally,
like,
manipulate it so that Kira would send baby clothes that Bobby already had to them.
To make her believe. Like, the level of deception, it is insane. It is really, really crazy. But yeah, I don't know. Like I say, I see both sides. I see the side where it's like she was completely manipulated, and I see a side where she, obviously, there was some level of willful ignorance, maybe from her part as well. But just be diligent, guys. Just be extremely diligent about who you're talking to online, and, like, don't let people exploit, like, maybe if you're lonely and stuff like that, like, don't let people exploit that.
Yeah.
And... definitely. Have good internet safety practice.
Yes, I think.
And don't be a catfish. That is just weird.
To be fair, I also, I think given her age, if she was 32 in 2011, I feel like she's kind of the generation, like, maybe like an older millennial kind of vibe, where, or is, I don't know if it's a younger Gen X or whatever, but, like, they're of the age where, like, they kind of obviously did
A bit more gullible online.
They use the internet, but it, when they were, like, in school and stuff, it was never, like, a thing where, like, there was no one knew, like, safety about it or the extent of it or whatever. So I feel like they never actually got that kind of lessons on how to be diligent online and stuff. So. Yeah.
I feel so bad for her. That's, like, for someone who actively wants to get married and have a family and have children, that's a decade of her life. That's, like... like, biologically, for a woman, you'll never get that. Oh, I feel so bad. I really hope.
That's the thing that makes me actually feel, like, angry towards Simran about
it. Like, because it's like, you call it a schoolgirl era. Like, you have really, you don't understand how valuable, like, that time is, like, until you get to that point. You know, as a woman, like, we're not like men, where our biological clock can just keep going until, like, we're seven, we can have children when we're 70. Like, we do have a finite amount of eggs and time to have children. And she actively really, really wanted that. And Simran might have robbed that from her. Which is horrendous. And when I was watching it, I was like, I really hope that a really nice, upstanding Punjabi Sikh guy watches that and they fall for Kira and then they live happily ever after and they have children. I really hope that she finds someone.
I hope that they meet in person.
I hope that he goes and finds her in person.
Yes. Oh dear.
How sad.
Right. In other sad news from this week. Mm. Yeah. Liam Payne. It's obviously condolences go out to Liam Payne's family, his young son as well. For those that don't know, the former One Direction member Liam Payne died at the age of 31 in Argentina on Wednesday after he fell from a third floor balcony. The thing that I want to speak about is actually the way that the media responded to it, specifically TMZ. So basically it was actually so weird. So I was actually
did they break it
No. So we actually, me and my friends kind of were like onto this from a bit earlier on, because it was actually like Sachin messaged our group chat saying, guys, like the Argentinian news is reporting that Liam Payne has like fallen from a balcony. I think he must have seen it on Twitter or something. But and we were literally like, what? Like, why?
It's crazy,
like,
how fast news travels.
Yeah,
like,
but then we were literally like Googling stuff. Like, we were, because obviously you
nothing
Google
was coming
and,
up, yeah.
And nothing was coming up. And we were like, is this like, why would this? Why would it, there was only one Argentinian news website that it was coming from.
Right.
And then suddenly it all started coming through. Yeah. We were like, oh, this means it must be true. And obviously it was really sad. But TMZ was obviously, once the Western media started like reporting on it, TMZ jumped on that, and they made the decision to share photos of the scene of the incident, in which a part of Liam's lifeless body was shown on a wooden deck, and the part of the body shown, I think, was this arm/torso that had basically tattoos that were
his, that were obviously his.
And obviously a lot of people have come forward and be like, well, why, like, literally what was the need for that? Like, that's so...
It's, oh, I think, like, this is the thing about kind of, like, so TMZ are notoriously, like, in our opinion, parasitic kind of, like, news outlet. Like, they are notorious for reporting on things, like, without any like grace or like consideration given,
moral compass,
or like moral compass. Exactly, they are very kind of like paparazzi style entertainment news outlet, and I think it's that paparazzi style culture, like, that this really points to, which is, as I say, like, I think the word for it is parasitic. Like, it is, we have seen time and time again how, like, they don't respect people's boundaries. They are encroaching on people's personal spaces with absolutely no consideration to what the impact might be on, like, the person or, like, the family or the friends that they're with. But I think what TMZ did, like, with, showing Liam Payne's dead body, it's like... It's you've like really taken it to a different level. Like, I get it. Like, if that's your job as paparazzi or as a news outlet, like, you want the most kind of like tantalizing shot. You want the most tantalizing headline. You want to get the most clicks. That's going to pay your bills, whatever. But it's like, it's at a point where it's like human conscience should overtake your desire to get clicks, you know? And like, that TMZ just haven't actually acknowledged that. It's the fact
even now, like, so the executive producer, Michael Babcock, has been approached, and he's defended it, the decision to post these photos.
Saying what?
He said, basically, the photos were posted whilst the story was developing, and it wasn't, like, because for a while, it was just, oh, Argentinian media and police have reported that Liam Payne has died. Like, there was no kind of official confirmation for a while. So whilst it was a developing story, their defense was, oh, well, no one actually knew that it was Liam Payne. We had a photo that basically, obviously, insinuated that it was Liam Payne, so we made the decision to not show the whole body, but show a bit of it as confirmation of that. And then once... What was the reason? Like, there was literally no reason.
Like, you know, you're in the news, like, industry. You know how fast news travels. You know that, okay, cool, it's coming out. It's on its way. Like, that news is literally on its way. It's coming. You don't need to take it to that extent. Like, and also, like, unless you're a super fan, how are you going to really... Like, no one... Well, I'm not going to look at that and be like, oh, it must be Liam Payne because that's his tattoos. Yeah. I don't know his tattoos.
And they were like, oh, like, what? Once it was confirmed that it is Liam, they took the photo down. But it's like, so what? You put the photo up for the public to speculate, oh, is that Liam?
Is it him? Is it not? Oh, let's zoom in on the tattoos on his dead body. It's like, you have no kind of like respect for the sanctity of like human life, you know?
And even, like, if you had obtained that photo, you could say TMZ has obtained a photo which
we've shown
this. We're not going to share
it. I think what they did afterwards. I think afterwards they'd said TMZ has seen a photo. Why couldn't you do that the first time around?
Obviously, it's gone out. Like, so many people have screenshotted or whatever. Like,
the image is out there now. It's out there. Yeah. And, like, his son, his family, his the people who care about him, that's out there for them to see now. Do you know what I mean? And, like, no one should have to be put in that position where a loved one has just died and, like, their lifeless body is there. It's like... it's like a speculation porn. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's this kind of like this voyeurism that and we've spoken before about like parasocial relationships and how twisted they are, but this is like really a kind of a really twisted extent of it, in my opinion, you know, where it's like it's this kind of voyeurism that even in death that audiences around the world feel as though they have a right to look in, and like you don't. Some things are really just sacred, and like you don't. But
yeah, I think it kind of go like, obviously it's a completely different context as well, but I in the back of my mind I'm thinking about comparing how Liam Payne's lifeless body or at least part of it has been shared online compared to, say, for example, pictures and videos from Palestine right now. And it's kind of like, what, like, I wanted to get like your thoughts on that actually, in terms of like, is there ever actually a justified situation in which like sharing images, because obviously some people would argue like the stuff from Palestine, for example, needs to be shared in order to say, look, this is happening, but at the end of the day that's still human life.
I have always been like umming and ahhing about this, especially kind of like, this was a conversation I always had about the circulations of like victims, like black victims of like police brutality and stuff like that, because that was something that was a big thing where people would share those images, and I was like, again, it's this like pornography of pain and like speculation pornography, and I think that really really applied in that context with like black victims. And then I think my mind changed a little bit with like you know, what's been going on in Palestine, because then it was kind of like, where there's so much ignorance in the world to what's going on, I felt like in those instances it was imperative for like the world to see it, because there are instances where it's like you don't need to see it to believe it, whereas I think like in the case of Palestine, like you did kind of, it was so extreme that it was like people actually need to see what is going on over there, you know.
I think,
but like, in general, like I don't think we should we should, like, people's dead bodies should be, unless someone has, you know, consented prior to their death, like I don't think it should be, it's good practice to just be sharing photos of people's lifeless bodies.
I think, like, the thing that I'm getting from what you just said is that it's all obviously subjective and completely dependent on the actual situation. There is literally nothing good that could come from them sharing that picture of Liam Payne's body.
Like for investigative purposes, that was TMZ's line, like, who the beep are we to do the investigation? Even the argument is so moot, because it's like, why should the why should the wider public be speculating? Like, it's a job for the police. RIP. I feel quite, I don't know, but also, like, speaking of about Liam Payne's death, I think it's quite an interesting discussion, because it's like, obviously he's been in the like spotlight over the past few weeks, because his ex-girlfriend has been kind of breaking her silence on accusations of like abuse and stuff like that she faced at his hands, and I think as a result of that some other stuff has come out as well, like various accusations. I've been seeing it online
as well, like,
like, I'm not going to go into it, you can look it up for yourself, but like some pretty really serious allegations, multiple kind of victims. And I have said always on the show, like, when that kind of stuff happens, I always tend to side with like the victim, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, innocent until proven guilty, it's a smear campaign, it's because he's famous. But I think whoever it is, I always tend to side with the victim, and like that I do in this case, I do personally believe like what's being said and stuff, and I think that then makes it really complicated to like actually say like rest in peace to him. And I think I saw a lot of people kind of like put it in a way where it's like, you can acknowledge the fact that, like, say for example, it's true, what he did is true, obviously we don't know, but like, say for example, what he did is true, I think there's a part of it where like you can say, you can accept the fact that he did those things, right? And you can hold him to account for the fact that he did those things, but then also be sad for, like, because a lot, One Direction was, they are huge, you know, and like a lot of us grew up with them as like a household name. They'd play on the internet, they'd play all over the TV, everything, they were everywhere, you know, for our generation growing up. So I think it is also still possible to be like, wow, this figure of him that I grew up with, that for me is sad. You know, that's gone. But then also at the same time, you know, hold space for the fact that, cool, he has caused harm to these people.
I think also who he was to other people as well. At the end of the day, he might have allegedly done these things, but then also he's still a father, he's still a friend, he's still a family member.
That's it, and like, it's also holding space for other people's grief, you know? Yeah. Like, it's
like, I've seen videos of his dad that he's gone out to Argentina to, like, where the hospital is, and he's literally, his dad is being so, like, he's, like, personally thanking the fans that are there and stuff. He's, it's just so sad. Like, I can't imagine, like, having to fly, like, halfway across the
knowing
world.
Knowing that, like, your child is dead. Like, that's the... I always say, like, I think that is my worst nightmare. It's, like, my child dying before me, God forbid. But, yeah, no, I think it's quite complicated. But, ultimately, I do think two things can be true at once. You can hold him to account.
Exactly,
but you can also
sides, yeah.
Yeah, you can also mourn, you know, whatever. But you know what was really interesting? Do you remember Rebecca Ferguson, who was on X Factor?
Yeah.
Did you see her statement?
Yeah, and Katie Wastel as well.
Yeah.
All, like, quite a few people come forward saying, like, this, he was a victim of
right.
the pop industry, specifically, like, X Factor style.
Because recently there have been a lot of conversations talking about that kind of exploitative nature of, like, these talent shows, and, like, particularly, I know a lot of people have particularly named, like, Simon Cowell and the way that he's, because obviously he's the kind of boss and he's in charge and all of this is his whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have specifically named him, and they've kind of, like, pointed fingers as like, young contestants on X Factors have come forward, and X Factor have come forward and been like, we had, like, a really hard time on the show, and this is how we were treated, and we were exploited, and we were manipulated, and blah 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 blah, and they didn't care about our mental health, and this is the trajectory that it set us on now for the rest of our life, you know. And a lot of people have come forward in light of Liam Payne's death to be like, actually, we really do believe that he was a victim of that. I know Rebecca Ferguson, she, in her statement, she literally said, I truly believe that if he had never gone on X Factor, that he would be alive. And, like, I do think there's some substance to those claims, because I know also there's pictures that have been released of his hotel room before he fell. And obviously, like, there's just drugs everywhere.
It's implied that he wasn't in a good physical or mental state.
Right. There were also reports of, like, an altercation right before he fell, like, in the hotel, and I think maybe at some point police had to be called or something, you know. Like, he obviously just wasn't right. Like, if you look
he's been in rehab before and stuff, so like, he's had these
issues like, exactly. So it is, like, I do really see kind of truth in what they say, in the sense that, like, I can imagine as a young impressionable young adult boy that you go into this game show and now talent show, whatever, and, like, you're not looked after, and, like, you're groomed to act a certain way or be a certain thing. I can imagine, like, mentally how that would mess you up.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. I think ultimately at its core is, it's always going to be sad that someone has passed away, but there's so much, there's so much within this, basically.
Yeah, I think One Direction, like, they were really symbolic, and they represented a lot to a lot of people. Even, like, for me, like, I don't really listen to that kind of music, but, like, me and my little sister growing up, one of our bonding things that we would always do, my baby sister, like, we would always sing, like, One Direction songs together, you know. So, like, even for me looking at it, I'm like, wow, like, I guess there's some people that you just, I don't know, like, people that are, like, really famous and stuff like that, you just always, you don't think of their mortality, you know. No. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, it is sad.
Yeah. Moving back to what we were speaking about before in regards to Palestine, I think there's been a number of, like, I'd say significant developments over the past week or events per se. I think for me the first one was, again, this image of a video circulating of the bombing of a camp outside a hotel where a 20-year-old Palestinian man who was literally tied up to an IV drip was burnt to death. Yeah. And it is literally a horrific video of him just, like, he can't do anything, and you literally just see him just burning to death. Like, it's just stuff
like how do you sit there and say anything about it? Like, how do you actually sit there and say anything about it? I've said on the show so many times that, like following what's been going on in Palestine, like, it's been over a year now, but, like, every single time, like, you think that Israel have reached, like, the extent of their depravity, they go and do something else, and you're like, I genuinely, like, could not have imagined up something so cruel. Do you know what I mean? Like, genuinely, from the depths of my imagination, I couldn't have imagined that video and that image. is possibly one of the most harrowing things that, like, and that's saying something, because, like, we've seen so many, like, just every single day, it's things that are, like, just that you can't, like, you can't even stomach, you know, things that, like, in the human condition we're not even meant to see, let alone for people to experience. But this image is like, he is burning alive. Like, you can see his human silhouette, he's attached to an IV drip, and he is burning alive. Like, I don't understand what could ever possibly be, like, a justification for that. No. You know, like, yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know. There's nothing to say to intellectualize it, because that is just at the absolute base of it, like, a travesty.
I did see as well that you shared something on socials about, like, the language also used to refer to current events, that I thought was, like, quite interesting and worth, like, just referring to. Is, yeah, I think the image in the, or the post in particular, do you want me to send it to you? The post in particular was analysing a Sky News article, and it was just, I think there's, like, 8 or something, like, ways in which points, just, like, yeah, the language in which it's used, like, it's just so...
It was basically, it was a sociology lecturer basically dissecting a Sky News article. The article was, Israel names teenage soldiers killed in Hezbollah drone attack as 23 die, in quotes, in Gaza school strike. And he makes 7 points about kind of implicit, like, bias and kind of propaganda and brainwashing or whatever, like an inherent kind of dehumanization of Palestinians throughout. Shall I read it out, or so, like, number one, treating the 4 Israeli soldiers as more important than the 23 Palestinian children by leading the story in that way. Number two, infantilizing active duty soldiers as teenagers while not emphasizing the age of the school kids. Number three, the classic use of the passive voice. Israelis are killed while Palestinians merely die. Number four, putting scare quotes around 23 die kind of, like, undermines the credibility of that claim. Number five, using the word attack for Hezbollah, but choosing a more neutral and clinical word like strike for the Israeli aggression, allowing Israeli sources to dictate the framing of the story. So Israel names teenage soldiers. Number seven, actually naming the Israeli soldiers, but not doing the same for the far greater number of Palestinians.
And it's actually mad, because you read all that and it's like, it's actually so clear.
It's right there. Yeah. It's right there. And it's a Sky News. Do you know what I mean? Like, they are one of the most kind of globally pervasive and well-established, supposedly well-respected news outlets in the world, globally.
Yeah, and it's 16 words.
Like, 16 words and all of that, like, kind of all that bias and dehumanization in 16 words. And truthfully, like, that I think it's, like, just so perfectly anecdotal of the kind of the West's perception, the West's treatment, and the West's reporting, their feelings, their behaviors towards Palestinians, their absolute disdain that the West has, you know, the kind of depth of anti-Palestinian sentiment that exists here in the West. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And all into one headline. So can you imagine, like, they're reporting multiple news stories a day for the past plus year. And it's calculated. Like, you can't have 7 separate coincidences in a 16-word headline. Like, this is obviously calculated.
And I'd like to think that, like, before these stories are put out, they're checked and double-checked by other people.
Of course. It's not one person just, you know, it's not like they're writing a Facebook post and they do it unilaterally and then they hit post and that's it. It's an entire system of people that will edit and co-edit and whatever.
Yeah. The other main event that's happened this week is the killing of Yahya Sinwar, who was the leader of Hamas. He was killed on Wednesday. And I suppose the main thing that I kind of got from that was just kind of the way in which he was killed, sort of thing. Like,
I think it revealed a lot about Israeli just lies, to be honest, like the Israeli cover for what their behavior is in Palestine. They have obviously been indiscriminately carpet bombing civilian areas, schools, hospital, refugee camps. Like, there's no area that is safe in Gaza at all. And their entire kind of premise of these attacks has been that it's because Hamas are hiding. They're using civilian shields. They're hiding underground. They're hiding in schools. They're hiding in hospitals. They're hiding in refugee camps. And actually, so Sinwar was the head of Hamas, right? And actually, him being killed was not a targeted operation. Funnily enough, it was not a targeted operation. They did not go in there intending to kill him because they didn't know that he was there, right? And it just goes to show, and it reveals so much about the kind of intention of Israelis' program in Palestine. Firstly, the fact that he wasn't underground and he wasn't hiding in schools and hospitals and refugee camps like they've been claiming the whole time. You came across him on the front lines. Like, you know, secondly, the fact that, and in the end, they ended up using like a drone bomb to kill him or whatever. And it's insane because it's like, is your intelligence that bad? Like, either you're doing it deliberately and you don't actually believe that Hamas are hiding here, there and whatever, and you're just doing it because your intention is to bomb civilians. Or number two, like, you've made a genuine mistake, but it's like, in that instance, then when you send in the drone, because they have like camera footage, right? Yeah. And it's like, if that's a technological capacity that you have to have such an accurate kill,
why is it taking a year in this to do it?
And why are you dropping bombs on densely populated civilian areas if that's the extent of your... Because Israel have now, obviously, their narrative is like, this is a massive win, you know? Yeah, like, and
again, it's another instance of where they've kind of exposed themselves because they've released the video footage of his death or the moments before his death. And it does kind of reveal, like, all of these things. And like you say, the fact that ultimately, he wasn't shielding himself with Israeli...
He
wasn't shielding himself with either Israeli hostages or Palestinian civilians.
He was on the front. And this is the thing, like, he was on the front lines fighting with the rest of the resistance. Like, he wasn't hiding. He wasn't embezzling the funds. He wasn't... Whatever claims they had obviously were not true. Like, he was literally... He was indistinguishable from the rest of the fighters, you know? Like, you just happened across him. It was coincidence. It was not a targeted operation, which, in the first instance, debunks everything that they're saying about Hamas leaders and the Hamas operation. And also, like, reveals a very sorry state of Israeli operations, because it's like, why are you bombing civilians if this is what your technological capacity is, as you're boasting at this point?
Like, you should be able to literally use drones like that and, like, and again, I'm not saying that they should do this, but if this is what they're going to do, then they should be able to literally use those drones to assess, is this person a threat?
Because in the end, that's what they said. They were like, oh, look at how great our technological advances are. Like, we were able to get up close and take this video and kill him with the drone. Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, well, why have you not done that this whole... That's what you want to do. Why have you not done it the whole time?
So many innocent people
had to die, you know? So it shows that you obviously had this capacity all along and you've chosen. It was a choice to drop £2,000 bombs on civilian areas over and over and over again for the last plus year, you know. But
yeah,
I do find it interesting, on a separate note, about how the kind of how stark the differences are between the kind of sentiments regarding Sinwar's death, because the West have really claimed it a victory, like, to the point where even Keir Starmer did a press... Did you see?
No.
Like, a press thing. Oh, my God. I just, in my opinion, find him so insufferable. But he really came forward and he did this, like, press thing, and he was like, it's a great thing. It's a victory for humanity that Sinwar's dead. Like, blah, blah, blah. And that's been kind of really mirrored by... American leaders, and everyone has come forward and really said this thing about, you know, it's great that Sinwar's dead. But it's really funny because then it's like loads of other people are like, you've tried to like embarrass him, you've tried to humiliate him, all you've done is like made a martyr out of him. You know, I'm not going to comment on my personal feelings because I don't want to get in trouble. But what I will say is that, and I'll say this for everyone, is that I would be very, very careful about internalizing the Western definition of what is a terrorist, because we have seen historically, like, Nelson Mandela was a terrorist. He was literally on the FBI's most wanted list. Like, people who have turned the tide of history, and I'm not saying this about anyone in particular, I'm just saying this as like a thing. like, I personally don't trust the West's definition of what makes a terrorist, because every kind of like freedom fighter that to this day we celebrate has at some point, like Assata Shakur, I think to this day is still on the FBI's most wanted list, you know, and yet she's celebrated as like a revolutionary black leader. So I would just say be very careful about who you believe are terrorists based on what the West tell you, and do your own research and do your own due diligence.
I think it also goes without saying as well that, okay, say for example we are to take this like narrative of, oh, it's a victory, what now? Like,
yeah.
Like, surely that, like what yeah. happens now?
Well.
Like, are there more, like,
how does that impact your yeah. operation now?
Are there more supposed targets? Should you surely maybe be de-escalating now?
Mm.
Or in reality, I think what is going to happen is, as you said, a lot of people from the resistance will ultimately view him as a martyr. Mm-hmm. And it's the same as when they're literally bombing the civilians indiscriminately. Ultimately, it just creates new people. Like, ultimately,
right, exactly, exactly. Like, and this is it. This is it.
He himself was born in the refugee camp.
That still exists to this day.
Yeah.
And it's like, you lot are still not seeing the problem, right? And I say this all the time. Like, once again, I am not commenting on the definition and the terming and the allocation of what is a terrorist and what is not. I'm speaking purely from an ideological stance of how the kind of aggression and the violence and the persecution faced by Palestinian objectively incubates like militarism, and objectively incubates resistance and what the West then turn around and call terrorists. Can you imagine if you are a Palestinian, you are born in Gaza, and in your lifetime, you have been besieged. You have lived your entire life in besieged Gaza. Can you imagine that your house might have been bombed, your entire family might have been killed, parts of your city have been destroyed, you've been put into refugee camps. Like, you have nothing left at that point, right? And all you've seen your whole life is aggression, aggression, aggression from one side. Can we truly say that we would rise above that and not join a resistance movement to fight against that? Can any of us truly say that? Like, you know, and like, it's so easy to sit there and be like, Hamas are terrorists. You know, like 85% of, there was a point, I can't remember, I don't know if this is still the case, but there was a point where 85% of Hamas personnel were orphans. And no one is talking about this. No one is connecting the dots. Like, these things don't, you don't wake up one day and be like, yep, I'm going to join this militant group. You know, like, there's a reason why it happens. And it might have something to do with the fact that Gaza has been besieged for the past 76 years. I don't know.
Just maybe.
I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah. It is just a... Yeah. I literally just don't know what to say.
Like, draw the dots yourself. Do you know what I mean? Draw the dots yourself. And do you know what's so funny as well is that I've been making this point about Islamist militants in the West. Because obviously, like, I grew up in a post 9/11 world and, like, oh, Muslims are terrorists, Islam is violent, blah, 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 boring. That's all I've ever heard my whole life. However, there is a case where there have been militant Islamist militant groups in the West who have genuinely wanted to, like, whatever, take down the West or whatever. I have always spoken about how that kind of sentiment, that kind of feeling, and then that motivation to action of those, you know, Islamist militant groups has been, as I say, incubated by Islamophobia. If you live in the West, right, and you are facing Islamophobia every single day, and like, people are demonizing you, people are demonizing your religion, like, it doesn't take much then to be like, oh my God, the West really is the enemy, and oh my God, I have to like now become, you know, like, it's not difficult now to be recruited into this like militant group. Not excusing it, but I'm just saying, like, it's called radicalization, you know, like, and it's a process, and it doesn't exist in a vacuum. And I've been speaking about this, like, honestly, for so long, for so many years. I'm like, if the West really believes that there's an issue of Islamist militancy in the West and they really want to tackle that, you need to first and foremost look at how your, like, programs of Islamophobia are radicalizing those people and incubating that kind of action. That's first and foremost. And you will never truly defeat Islamist militancy unless you look at yourself and your behavior towards Muslims first. And that's it. If you really want to defeat Hamas, don't give them a reason to join the resistance groups. That is, it literally comes down to that. Don't radicalize them. Don't kill their families. Don't bomb their cities. Like, finished.
It is just common sense at the end of the day when you put it like that.
It is.
Right. I mean, sticking on, maybe not Bad Vibes Island, more just like Western Bad Vibes. That's like a, what's it called, spin-off show? I don't know.
Western Bad Vibes.
Yeah. I saw a story put out the other day that basically is talking about how the UK will not offer an apology over slavery at the Commonwealth Summit. First of all, why is the Commonwealth...
Rees-Mogg? Jacob Rees-Mogg, if I speak. Anyways.
Guys, first, why is the Commonwealth Summit actually a thing?
Why is the Commonwealth a thing, yeah, first and foremost? Yeah, this exactly. is something that I've spoken yeah. on again. Why is the Commonwealth a thing? like what? The Commonwealth should be a thing precisely because the thing they have in common is that they're all receiving reparations.
Exactly.
The Commonwealth should be the name of a bank transfer, the name of a bank account. The Commonwealth should be the name of the bank account from which the UK pay their reparations out to ex-colonies. And that's it.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be no Commonwealth Games. Are you joking? Are you joking? What's the prize? Reparations.
Does it's the UK crazy. Actually compete in them as well, doesn't it? As well, it's weird. Like,
I respect the countries. I remember there's a handful of Caribbean countries that were like, actually, we're leaving the Commonwealth. Good for you lot. Good for you lot.
Well, to get into this specifically, the government has said that there will not be an apology over Britain's role in the transatlantic slave trade when King Charles and Keir Starmer visit the Commonwealth Summit in Samoa next week. Last year, the
Firstly,
King...
Firstly, I would love to go to Samoa. Oh
yeah,
God.
Not for the Commonwealth Summit, though.
No.
Last year, the King spoke of his greatest sorrow and regret at the wrongdoings of the colonial era whilst on a visit to Kenya, but stopped short of an apology, which would have depended on the agreement of ministers. There's already been a rejection of reparations over slavery, but number 10 now says that there won't be an apology either. Instead, the focus will be on current issues. A government spokesperson said, such as shared challenges and opportunities faced by the Commonwealth, including driving growth across our
economies.
You lot
are hilarious. You lot are hilarious. Let's talk about all the ways that we effed up your country, but we're not going to give no reparations, though. But let's talk about it. Oh, my God.
Driving the economic state of every single country of the Commonwealth surely is, like, historically dependent on what...
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. The audacity. Oh, my God. The audacity is hilarious. It's funny. You have to laugh. But do you know what? Can I tell you something, though? This is... I've realised we're never going to get an apology. Do you know why? Do you know what comes after an apology? Reparations. They'll never apologise. As soon as they apologise, they're now accountable. And to make amends, they're going to have to pay... They're going to have to pay out. Mm. And they'll only do it if you're the slave master. They'll pay you if you're the slave master. They'll never pay you if you're the slave. My God. What kind of backward system is that one? It's crazy. It's insane. But do you know what? But do you know what's hilarious about this thing, right? It's like, it's not just the denial of the fact that they owe reparations. It's the kind of moral pontification and the kind of the moral high horse that they take for stopping slavery. It's hilarious. Jacob Rees-Mogg literally came forward and he tweeted, like, actually, we should be, you know, Britain really did a good job by ending slavery.
Like, was it like Christian values or something
based
like
on
that?
Christian values. Are you mental? The same Christianity that, and this is not, I respect Christianity, but like it was weaponized.
Yeah.
It was weaponized in slavery and in colonialism and in all the missionaries and all the crusades. Like the same Christianity that you weaponized to spread colonialism and slavery is now the one that has released slaves from their shackles. Be so for a, you need to go and find your mind. Jacob Rees-Mogg, you need to go and find your mind. What are you on about? Britain deserves applause. You know what? You know, one time I tweeted, because I remember it was a similar this conversation comes up all the time.
Yeah.
One time I tweeted, if I sleep with your dad and I continue sleeping with him, are you gonna, and then one day I stop because your dad don't want to sleep with me no more, he's causing problems, whatever, and I stop sleeping with him, are you gonna thank me for stopping sleeping with him, or are you gonna slap me for sleeping with him in the first place?
Just to be clear, this is a completely
hypothetical situation. And then one old middle-aged white man replied saying, depends how good you are in bed.
Right, so this is before your Twitter went private, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but my point is like, okay, let's use a more PG example. If I if I get up and I start slapping Carlos.
How is this a PG example?
If I get up and I start slapping Carlos, like one cheek to the other, one cheek, oh. The cheeks on his face. Pause. If I just keep slapping Carlos, and then eventually Carlos like puts up resistance, and I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered with this. It's not viable for me anymore. There's too much resistance. I'll just stop slapping him. Do you expect me to now be lauded for the fact that I've stopped slapping him, or am I a villain for slapping him in the first place for no reason?
So I'm still stuck on the cheeks, but
I had to clarify before.
I think we've made the point.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I have to break it down in these analogies because obviously people aren't getting it. Because there are really some people out there that are like, oh, Britain did a great job. We actually stopped slavery, blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? You created slavery in the first place. Like, you were a part of slavery in the first place. Like, you lot had a massive hand in the Atlantic slave trade, which is one of the foremost global watersheds in the world, by the way. Like, you lots were there. Do you know what I mean? Like, where's the acknowledgement of that? Just because you stopped doing something bad doesn't mean that you can't be accountable for doing the bad thing in the first place.
Yeah.
Is that not logic?
It is logic.
So what's going on in Jacob Rees-Mogg's head then?
If I speak,
yeah, you get.
I hold it back. I don't want to be start talking about you cheeks and stuff.
Because it's like, it's something so obvious. It's like the sky is blue. You lot were bad for doing slavery. Like, what is the contention here?
Mm.
I don't get it.
Yeah. And it's literally the cheats to then speak about, oh, we want to grow the economies across the Commonwealth. Well, I have an idea, actually, of how you might be able to do that.
And it's the audacity of the fact that, like, and this always spins me, it's like they did pay reparations over the slave trade, and it wasn't for the slaves, it was the former slave masters.
Because they were
out of pocket, to the point where they were still paying off that debt, the government was still paying off that debt till 2015.
Yeah, literally.
Like, less than a decade ago. What world are we living? What kind of simulation is this one? It's mental. Anyways.
Bad Western vibes.
Awful Western vibes. Just give the people them an apology and keep it pushing. Like, seriously.
Right. To finish with today, I thought I'd rein it in and give a bit of like positivity back. I saw a video this week that was actually really... it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a woman that gets into a lift and she's with like a couple of men or whatever, but she's speaking on the phone.
Oh, I see this all the time. This video comes up all the time and I love it.
She's speaking to her dad and clearly she's not where she's meant to be. Yeah. And she's like, oh no, I'm at the market.
Yeah.
And then all of the guys around her just start yelling like, oh, something.
Yeah,
oh.
like making market noise. I love that video. Oh my God,
it's like they fully got on board with
it. Yeah, I love that video. Honestly, it comes up on my timeline like every year and I love it so much.
Yeah, because I could tell it was old, but I saw it for the first time.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I was literally like, this is actually hilarious.
I've tweeted it before. It's sick. I love it. It's so funny.
I just think it's like,
That's what you call community. Yeah. It's what you call looking out for each other.
She didn't have to say anything.
She didn't have
to
say
anything. Just jumped on it.
And then, like, one guy started doing it, and the other guy started chiming in, and the other guy started chiming in. And it's like, how amazing that we're able to look out for each other in this way and, like, look after each other in this way.
I think that's what we should be doing for looking out for each other, not, like, judging other people or doing, like, making side eyes or like rolling our eyes, whatever. We should be jumping to help people live their lives and do whatever they want to do.
Agreed. Yeah, and that's really funny. And it's also like that inherent recognition of like, oh, I was there once. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the guys must have known, like, we know what this is. Like, we were once young, we were there, like, we were doing that.
Yeah.
It's cute.
It is cute.
Just a life stage.
Obviously, you must be quite downtrodden at the moment, though, Halima, given the circumstances, you and your sister. I wouldn't expect you to enjoy the video now.
You know what's so funny is that, like, you know how I said I wake up and I come here and, like, I don't eat, I don't nothing, I just get ready and I come here. So, like, by the time the show gets old, because I don't eat till, like, I don't eat my first meal till the afternoon, evening anyway. So by the time the show starts ending, I start getting hungry. So like this whole time I'm sat here and I'm thinking, oh, I'm quite hungry. What am I going to eat? Like it's just, meanwhile, my family are thinking I'm wasting away. I'm starving myself. And I'm sat here thinking like, oh, should I eat this? Should I eat that? Like,
couldn't be further from the truth.
So funny.
What are you going to eat?
I don't know. So like, I had tacos last night and we've got like a lot of taco filling, like meat left. So I'm thinking I'll either make like a pasta with the tacos, like the taco meat.
Yeah.
Or like a toasty with the taco meat and like cheese.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Soft or hard shell tacos?
Hard shell. I like the hard shell ones. What are you?
I don't know. I had hard shell for the first time the other day and it actually was all right.
It's delicious. What kind of meat do you have with mince?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good with mints. Oh, my God.
But like, I had it whilst I was out. But I think the apprehension that I have about the hard shell is just, like, the possibility of the snap. Like, if it's too hard. Do you know what I mean?
No, you cook it.
Well, first of all, I'm not cooking it. I'm having it, like, eaten out or whatever. But, the possibility of the snap. Like, with a soft shell, you know
it's
kind of...
You mean, like, it falling apart?
Yeah, the soft shell is fine. But the hard shell, I'm worried that it's going to, like... It's gonna break off, and then it's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, well, there's a system, you hold it like that, and you eat it from the side. It's delicious. We have a Mexican at work called, we love Mexican food. We have Mexican night in my house quite a lot, and we do like a number of fillings, and then we have like loads of different sauces. I'll do like a mango salsa, I'll do like charred corn, I'll make my own coleslaw, and then we'll have like soft shell, hard shell.
As you can see, she is really, really not eating on the moment.
I'm wasting away, guys. I've got no appetite. I'm so sad.
I mean, I haven't even, like, talked, though. Like, just, like, congratulations to your sister. Positive vibes.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm like, you lot, it's about my sister and you're there, like, concerned about me plotting on... 6 months. I've got 6 months of freedom left.
What is that like?
If you want me, you must... Now is the time or forever hold your silence. If you want me, you must claim me by when?
You know what? 420.
420. You must collect by 420 if you want me. Otherwise, I'm gone. You get it? I'm off the shelf. I don't know. That's quite ominous. I don't know what that means. Like, what's the final solution? Like, what's going to happen in 6 months' time if I'm not hitched? What they're going
to
do?
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Oh, better yet, save me. Save me. But yeah.
Anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in today. It's been a pleasure as always. We will catch you same time next week. But until then.
Oh, Simran's here next week as well, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Probably going to be hungover from Disclosure. But yeah, thank you everyone.
See you later.